Now we're holding on to Tzadik Gimel Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Hamoichu peiros lachaveira." A person sells peiros to somebody else. Specifically, by peiros over here, we mean grain. Harez mekabel all of roivat hinoifus l'sa. The buyer has to be willing to accept a quarter of a kav of dirt, which we're going to see in the Gemara. Specifically, what we mean by dirt, by dirt, but anyway, things that are not grain, at the rate of one roiva, one quarter kav per sa. There are six kavim to a sa, so a quarter kav would be 1/24, so a little over 4%. So he has to be prepared that he bought, let's say, 100 pounds of grain. He has to expect that a little over 4 pounds of it might be dirt or other things that are not supposed to be there. Because that's normal, generally speaking. When you buy grain in bulk, then you're gonna have like that. To Enim, similarly, if he's buying figs, Makabalol of Esa Mesulois Lasa, he has to be willing to accept that there are going to be he has to be willing to accept that there will be 10 worm-eaten ones out of every 100. In the same way, if he sells him 10, the Rashbam says he has to be prepared that one of them is going to be. It's normal for with figs for one out of every 10 to be like that. Martif Shoyayin, and if he sold him a cellar full of wine, full of barrels of wine, Makabalol of Esa Kosis Islamea, then the buyer has to be willing to accept 10 Kosisos per 100. Kosisos means inferior wine. We're going to learn later on in a couple of blah that we're talking about, that the wine is on the verge of spoiling, but it's not actually spoiled yet. The Rashbam brings the word, where do we get this word, koisesos, is there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that describes a mushel of a vine that the Jewish people are compared to, and the expression is, they're talking about how Nebuchadnezzar is going to attack them as period koises for Yavish, he will cut off and then it'll dry up. And it'll cut off and the fruit and it'll dry up. So we see that the word yukosis means to damage or cut off. So the same way over here, kosisos means barrels of wine that are kind of damaged and where the wine is not so good anymore. It's not actually vinegar yet, but it's already on the verge of turning. Anyway, again, the idea is it's normal when you're buying a whole wine cellar that it's going to be like that. Similarly, kankanim bashoroin. Similarly, if he's selling him empty barrels in the Shoroin, which is a region in Eretz Yisrael, broadly speaking, it's the area along the coast, approximately from Tel Aviv north to about Haifa or so. So makabalol of esipitosis lameya, then the buyer is going to have to accept that 10 out of every 100 are going to be pitosis, which means that they're going to be lower quality barrels. The barrels in those times are made out of earthenware. We do actually find in other contexts that the soil in that area of Eretz Yisrael is not really of such great quality as far as structurally. We have, for example, it's mentioned, the Gemara mentions that the Kohen Gadol, when he was davening on Yom Kippur, would say a tefillah for the people of the Shoroin, the people of that part of Eretz Yisrael, that their houses shouldn't collapse on them and they'd be buried in the ruins of their houses, because again, the idea was they would make their bricks out of the local soil, and it was then they were bad quality, and over time they would deteriorate, so therefore they would say a special tefillah for them. In Nusach Ashkenaz, they actually have that even now, when we have in the Seder HaVodah on Yom Kippur, when we say over what the Kohen Gadol's tefillah was in Nusach Ashkenaz, They have that line. So by the same token, over here, that soil was not so great for making barrels, and therefore you have to expect that 10 out of every 100 barrels, 10%, are going to be of inferior quality. Okay. With the exception, of course, you know, now we're not talking about if to begin with the understanding was that he's going to give him 100% good, but we're going to see about that in the Gemara. We're talking about unless otherwise specified. So the Gemara says, Tonid of Katina, Roiva Kitnis Lasa. So the Katina also teaches a Braisa. Now here in the Mishnah, we were only talking about grain, but Rav Katina adds that a Braisa mentions that also when it comes to kitnis, when it comes to beans, then also he has to be, when it comes to grain, that also What Rav Kinna is saying is, when we say in the Mishnah that he has to be willing to accept a quarter of a kav of tinoifis, of dirt, doesn't mean actual dirt. What it means is that a quarter of a kav of the of what he bought out of every saw of grain that he bought might be kitnius, might be beans instead that got mixed in. So it can't actually be dirt. It has to be something edible, says Rav Kinna's Braisa. It just doesn't have to be grain. It can be a different kind of edible seed. Because, in other words, the point is, a person's not going to be willing to accept, a person's not going to be willing to be mochel on 4%+ of dirt, but he'd be willing to be mochel on that amount of beans that are mixed in. So the Gemara asks about fruitus loy. So you're telling me that if it was dirt mixed in, then the buyer is not going to accept it at all? Rabbi Bar Chiya Ketosfa. Ketosfa means it came from a place called Ketosfa. So he said in the name of Rabba, another place in Shas, I think this is quoted in the name of Rab, but anyway, if a person picks out a pebble from a granary, from a pile of grain that belongs to somebody else, then he has to give him the equivalent value of the wheat of the space that pebble took up. Because now what happens is, suppose this guy had wanted to sell the whole pile as is, then again, he's not obligated to give 100% clean. There might be pebbles and other things like that mixed in. So he could have sold that pebble for the value of grain. Now, like this, so that Rashbam gives two possibilities. One is that you actually caused him a hezek b'yadayim. Now, you can't put it back in because that would be, you can't deliberately go and mix in pebbles or dirt into your grain. What we're talking about in the Mishnah, that the buyer has to be willing to accept X percent of tinosis or whatever, is talking about it got mixed in naturally during the harvest, and therefore he has to be willing to accept it unless the deal was that you're going to give him completely clean grain. But over here, so now Reuven has a pile of wheat. You, Shimon, went and took a stone out of there. Now you can't put it back because you can't deliberately put in a stone into wheat and sell it as though it were wheat. But on the other hand, you've caused Reuven a loss because if he had sold the thing in bulk without checking it over, he would have been able to sell that pebble for the price of wheat. So now the Rashbam says one possibility is that you caused him an actual hezek, whereby picking up the pebble and throwing it out. Or the other possibility that Rashbam says, maybe it's not considered actual hezek, but it would be at least dina de garmi, which we've talked about before, that dina de garmi is a type of hezek where Reb Meir holds that you chayev for it, and then the halacha is like Reb Meir. And again, there is a big discussion among Rishonim what exactly is the definition of garmi versus grama, but in any case, there are cases where we're mechayev a person for a less direct form of hezek, and this would be an example of it. So then Tosfos points out there's further opinions, there are further relevant opinions on this. There's an opinion of Reb Shimon in various places in Shas called Dover Agurim Lamomen Kamomen Dummy, where we have something that in and of itself is not worth a certain amount of money, but the loss of it indirectly causes a loss of money. You have an example of chometz sh'over olav haPesach, where after Pesach it's worthless because it's osur b'hana. But if you have, for example, let's say a gazlan had stolen chometz and then over olav haPesach, where now had it still been in his possession, he'd be able to tell the original owner hare shalach l'fanecha, here it is, it hasn't changed any in its physical properties, so come take it and I'm not obligated anything else. Meanwhile, somebody else comes and damages it or burns it or whatever, and therefore, so he's caused now that the Gazlan is going to have to pay with actual money or goods or whatever. So it's Davar Gurim Lamomen. So in the same way over here, we would say that this pebble is Davar Gurim Lamomen. Then Tosfos discusses further that there may be that even the Chachamim in that Macholikus would agree over here. So the bottom line is, you have a few different opinions of what basis are we going to be mechayev him for taking out that pebble. Anyway, the point being, we see clearly from that din that it is expected that there are going to be pebbles or other dirt mixed into the grain to the extent where we can be mechayev a person for taking out those pebbles and therefore causing the owner of the grain a loss. So how can Rav Katina be telling us that the only thing you can have mixed in grain when you're selling it is kitnius, is various kinds of beans, implying that you can't have dirt at all? And when the Mishnah says tinofus, it doesn't mean dirt or pebbles or whatever. So the Gemara says no. Of course it is true that you could have dirt in there as well, and we assume that the buyer is moichel, on a certain amount of dirt. But what it is kitnis roiva. When it comes to that there are beans in there where, again, at least they're edible, then the amount would be a full roiva. Afruris pochas me roiva. But what Rav Katina is telling us is that when we're talking about dirt, then the amount would, or pebbles or whatever, yes, there could be a certain amount of them included, but it has to be less than a roiva in order for it to be a valid sale. If it's exactly a roiva, then the buyer would have the right to say that this is no good and I'm not obligated to accept it. Because the difference is, obviously, kitnis, at least you can do something with, you can eat, you can plant, or whatever, as opposed to dirt or pebbles, you can't even do that. Well, the question is, v'afruris roiva loy? So you're telling me that if there's exactly a roiva, about exactly 1/24 of dirt, then he's not obligated to accept it. V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, when a person sells produce to somebody else, then we have to break it down, let's break it down further. The Mishnah, I just said generically, Amurcha Peris. The Braisa is going to break it down further and explain. In each case, it is a roiva, but it's going to be different things that might make up the roiva. So Chitin, if he sells him wheat, Mekabalo is roiva kitnis l'sa. The buyer is going to have to expect that there could be as much as a roiva of beans mixed into it. So fine, So far that agrees with Rav Katina. And actually that would apply not only to wheat, but other minim as well, just that it's normal, it's more normal, Rashbam points out, it's more normal that kitnis grows among wheat. Now you do have a concept of kilayim, and we're going to take that point up soon in the Gemara as far as how this relates to the genim of kilayim, but the fact is it does sometimes happen that seeds get mixed up with each other in small quantities, and you're not expected necessarily to pick them out completely before you plant, so it is normal that kitnis grow among wheat. So he has to accept that. So Odin, the Braisa continues, if he sells him barley, Makabalol of Rovan Nishovas Lasa, then the buyer has to be willing to accept a quarter of a cav of Nishovas for every saw. Rashbam translates Nishovas as straw. The word comes from the word noshav, which means to blow, like in davening, yashev rucha yizlumoyim, where Hashem makes the wind blow, so mashav ruach for that matter, so nishovas would be from the same shodesh, so it means straw that blows around. And again, that's something that you're normally going to find together with a crop of barley. The Ritva gives a different explanation that Nishovas, it does come from that Shoresh, meaning blown, but it means inferior grains, means grains that are not quite as healthy and fat as the other ones. They're skinnier and more shrunken, and they're more easily blown around by the wind. Anyway. Adoshim, and then if he's selling him lentils, Makabalol of Roiva Achrurus Lasa, then the buyer has to be willing to accept a quarter of a cab of dirt per saw. Now, yes, the Braisa is mentioning differences between wheat and barley and lentils, but the Gemara is understanding at this point that it's not really a difference between them. It's more practically speaking, among wheat, usually the non-wheat items that you're going to find in there are typically going to be kitnius. Among barley, it's going to be nishovas. Among lentils, it's going to be dirt. But it doesn't mean that by each other mean you might not have the other ones as well. So my lav hu adin l'chitin l'sa'urim. So shouldn't we assume the same way as the Braisa is saying that if he's selling him lentils, then the buyer has to be willing to accept a quarter of a cab of dirt per saw of lentils, the same thing would apply to wheat and barley as well, and therefore that would, not like we just explained Rav Katina, we would say that even when it comes to dirt, still the threshold is a roiva, or the threshold is anything above a roiva is no good, but a roiva itself would be fine. So the Gemara answers no, because shani adoshin de mieker akri lahu. No, because actually the difference is that lentils, in fact, there is more of a reason to allow a full roiva of dirt in lentils, because lentils are picked by pulling them out of the ground. Unlike with wheat and barley, where you harvest them by reaping them, you take a sickle and you cut them off from the ground. Lentils you usually harvest by pulling them out of the ground. So therefore, more dirt comes with them. So, when it comes to lentils, we can say that he's obligated to accept a certain amount of dirt. That doesn't necessarily mean that would be the case by wheat or barley. Well, we want to ask back in that case the other way around. El taima dab doshim avachiti usairi loy. Well, then, in that case, then learn the other way around from the Braisa. So the implication seems to be that only by lentils, precisely because they're picked out of the ground, and therefore it's more likely for them to have dirt in them. So therefore, he has to be willing to accept dirt. Avachiti usairi loy. But when it comes to wheat and barley, on the other hand, you're saying it's not really expected that there should be dirt in them at all. Well, then based on that, shouldn't you be able to answer that when it comes to wheat and barley, maybe the implication of that last brisa is the buyer doesn't have to accept any amount of dirt mixed into them. What does it mean? Are we saying then that specifically by lentils, because they're pulled out of the ground, therefore he has to accept dirt, but wheat and barley, maybe since it's not so common for there to be dirt in them, then maybe he's not obligated to accept even less than a roiva. Because after all, otherwise the Braisa could have said that he has to accept less than a roiva by wheat. And we would understand all the more so by lentils. So the answer is no. La'olam chiti usairi mekabel afruris. No, the Braisa is not implying that by wheat and barley you shouldn't have to accept dirt at all. In fact, by wheat and barley you are obligated to accept a certain amount of dirt up to a roiva. Adoshim, it's tzrichale, but the chiddush of the Braisa is with lentils, the sakadai de chamina. Otherwise, you might have thought, tivin de mi'akra akri lahu. Look, you know, just the opposite. Because lentils are pulled from the ground, and therefore a lot of dirt tends to come with them, yosim eroiva nami lakabel. Maybe the buyer should have to accept even more than a roiva. Kamash malon, and therefore the Braisa is telling us that no, even by lentils, the maximum is a roiva. But that's not to imply that by wheat or barley, he shouldn't also have to accept dirt. He does. Just he has to be just the amount of dirt that he's obligated to accept would be less than a roiva. Only when it comes to if there's beans mixed in there, then it can be a full roiva. As usual throughout these parakim, really, it's one of those things that are called kaminig ha-medina. The Rambam points out when he brings these halachas in Hilchos Mechira, he says, listen, you know, you have places where the minig is that you're buying grain or whatever that has to be absolutely clean and it's expected and everybody accepts that it's going to be that way. And then you have places where you might have the opposite. You might have places where people are willing to tolerate even half of it would be dirt. So really ultimately it depends on the minig amok and how people usually do things in this place. And whatever it is what the understanding is, how it's going to be, unless otherwise specified. We do also have the din that Rabbah Chiyah had said that in places where the understanding is that there can be a certain amount of dirt or pebbles or whatever mixed in, then if somebody takes out a pebble from somebody else's pile of grain, then as we said at the top of the Amud, he's going to have to pay him because now he caused a hezek to the other guy, whether directly or indirectly, however we learn it. Okay. Omer Rav Huna, so Rav Huna says, so far we've been talking about if he just sells it according to the minig ha-mokum. But if we're going to go and clean it out, so the Rashbam explains, the buyer is makbid on that there shouldn't be any dirt in there, and he wants to go and sift it out. menapes koloi, then he's allowed to sift out all of it, meaning, in other words, that so say, for example, so you have a buyer bought, so say, for example, he sold him a saw of grain. Now, we're saying the threshold is that the buyer is not obligated to accept a roiva or more than a roiva of dirt. What happens, Rav Huna is saying, suppose that the buyer looked at it and said, you know what, I think there's more than a roiva of dirt in it. I'm going to go sift it out. So, and he winds up finding a roiva or more than a roiva, menapes kuloi, then he's entitled to sift out the entire thing and return all of it to the, all of the dirt to the seller and demand a refund for all of that. In other words, the seller can't say, look, up to a roiva you were willing to be moichel to me. Therefore, I shouldn't have to pay you for that. Once he's sifting, then he's entitled to sift it all out and get refunded for all of that. Now, what's the basis for that din? Amrilo din of amrilo knosa. Some say that this is an actual din. Some say that this is a matter of knas. A difference would be why is it important to know whether it's a din or a knas? So the Ritva points out two things. First of all, can we learn from this for other dinim? If it's a matter of dinim, of regular dinim omenis, then we can use this as an example for other cases where you have something that doesn't belong there, whether he's entitled to a refund of it. If you say that's a specific knas in this kind of case, then in general we don't learn one knas from another, because knasim, by definition, are kind of one-offs. That's one thing. Another thing is, we know throughout Seder Nezikin that we don't collect dinei knosos in Bavel, or nowadays any place, because we don't have people with the original smicha anymore. So if this is a matter of knas, then we wouldn't be able to apply this din nowadays. We would only say that if the lekeach grabs, if he's toifus, ein metzia miyada, we wouldn't take it away from him, but we, based in, would not be able to give him the authority to go and collect, because it's a matter of dinei knosos. Whereas if we say it's a matter of dinim mamonis, of regular dinim mamon, then sure, he's entitled to just like anybody else, anywhere in the world. Okay, so again, some say that it's a din, some say that it's a knas. Meaning, in other words, if we look at it as a din, amilo dina, mandi yoiv, zuzi, apeda shapiri yoiv. What it is when a person is paying money, he usually expects that he's going to get good quality fruit, good quality produce. The roiv alai tarachinish, he just figures when you have up to a roiv of dirt in there, he's not going to bother sifting it out, because it's only less than 1/24th, and therefore once he decides it's too much of a bother, then he's moichel on that amount. In other words, the Rashbam teaches out, if the seller were to say, I'm telling you these are payless yofis, I'm selling you good fruit. If you don't believe me, then it's up to you. If you want to go sift it out, then fine. Or otherwise you can show me how much dirt there is in there and I'll pay you. So now, therefore, so he figures it's yotza schare behefsedei, it's too much of a bother to take it out, and therefore he's willing to be moichel it. When you have more than a roiva, then he's going to go to the bother. And then once he already started, then it's easy enough to finish sifting it, and therefore he might sift out the whole thing. So that's what the Gemara says. When it comes to up to a roiva, the roiva like torach inish. When it comes to up to a roiva, when he estimates that there's less than a roiva, or exactly a roiva in here, he's not going to bother. Once he estimates that there's more than a roiva in there, he's going to bother to go pick it out. And once he does, then he's going to go through the whole thing and try to remove all of it. So looking at it that way, at that point, in other words, it's a matter of din, because then it's clear that he's not moichelon anymore. So in other words, the flow of the conversation would have been like this. Reuven says, I have grain to sell. Shimon says, is this clean grain? Reuven says, as far as I know, yes. You wanna see whether it's completely clean, go right ahead. So Shimon is gonna eyeball it and see, does it look like there's less than a roiva of dirt in there? If there is, then he's gonna say, you know what, it's too much of a bother for me to sift it out. Fine, I guess I'm gonna accept it as is, and I'm gonna be moichel. If he eyeballs it and sees that it's more than a roiva, then he's gonna say, you know what, actually I'm not taking you at your word that there's so little dirt in here, I'm going to go sift it out. And then already he goes and sifts out the whole thing. So therefore, so according to that way of looking at it, then it's a matter of in one case there's mechila, and in the other case there's not. And in that case, it's a matter of straight din, whether he's entitled to a refund of all of it or of none of it. But in any case, you wouldn't say, Reuven, the seller, wouldn't be able to say, well, look, up to a roiva your moichel, so I only have to pay you for the difference between a roiva and the amount that you actually found. No, we wouldn't say that. So that's one way of looking at it. Va'amila knasa. Others say, though, that we can look at it as a matter of a knas. We would say roiva shchiach, to have up to a roiva of dirt in there is common enough. Now, really, we might say that even more than a roiva, a person is usually going to be moichel. And he's willing to buy even when the fruit is not so good quality, because he knows it's normal there's going to be a certain amount of dirt in there. So up to a roiva, then we're not going to penalize the seller, because we would say like this. So roiva shchiach, to have up to a roiva 1/24 of dirt in there is common. Yosel lo shchiach, but to have more than that is really not so common. The ihu hu da'ariv, and then we have reason to think that maybe the seller actually mixed it in via dying, because why would there be such a high percentage of dirt in there when normally you don't find it to that threshold? Now we have a suspicion that the seller himself may have mixed it in. And kiven da'ariv, and once if we have reason to assume that he mixed in kansur rabbanon b'kule, then we could well say that the chachamim penalized him to remove all of it, because as far as we know, he might have mixed in all of it. So again, the Ritva had said a nakamina between whether it's a din or a knas would be whether we can do it and whether we can apply this din in Bavel, and also whether we can learn from it for other dinim. That Ashbam points out there's another nakamina as well. If we know for a fact that he never mixed it in, then would we penalize him or not? Well, since the whole reason for penalizing him is because we suspect that he mixed in. If we know for a fact that he didn't, then we'd have no reason to penalize him. Whereas if we say it's a matter, so then we would say that the buyer then has to be willing to accept no matter how much dirt there is. Or at least he'd be moichel on up to a roiva, and the guy would have to refund him for more than a roiva, as opposed to if we said that it was a din, then we would say, So that's the difference. If it's a din, then one way or the other, he's going to be entitled to a refund, because it's not a matter of that we suspect the seller of mixing it in. It's just that more than a roiva, he's not moichel. But if we say that's a knas, then we would apply that only where we have reason to suspect that the seller actually mixed it in via dahi. Okay, those are two sources of a kivin da'ariv. Once we have reason to think that the seller mixed it in, kansur and abonin b'kulei, then the chachamim penalize him about all of it and not just about the amount over a roiva. So two different ways of looking at what the din is. Now the Gemara is going to spend a while over here going on well into Daf Tzadik Hey, trying to prove or disprove Rav Huna's din. Simon Kol Shtore de Robin by Rav Nachman, I know of a Kabbalah Nusa. This is, as we've had many times in the Masechta, key words of the various brises and statements of Amiroyim that the Gemara is going to bring to prove one way or the other, to prove or disprove Rav Huna's din. So the Gemara says Mesi. The Gemara says I have a contradiction now again we're saying within Rav Huna's din we said we have two ways of understanding it. We can say that it's a matter of din, or we can say that it's a matter of knas. By the way, before we get into that, the Rashba points out a cute thing in this connection. He says, so what are we saying over here? When you have a buyer who has reason to suspect that there's more than a roiva over here, and he goes and sifts it out, then already he's going to go sift out the whole thing, and then we can talk about, is he entitled to a refund of all of it, or only if so, we can say that he may be entitled to a refund, that Rav Huna is saying he's entitled to a refund of all of it. So the Rashba says, here is something that we can use this as a simon for in a completely different area of halacha. Now, we know when it comes to Havdalah, Matzah Shabbos, we have two forms of Havdalah. We have Havdalah that we say in davening, after Chanan Tanu, and then we have Havdalah that we say on a cup of wine, the Nusach of Havdalah. And we know, the Gemara mentions in Brachos, that we have to do both of them. There was a period of time in Jewish history where people were so poor that they couldn't regularly afford wine, so then the Chachamim made that it's enough to just say Atachon Antanu. Later on, when they became rich, then they made Havdalah ala Kois, and eventually, even after they became poor again, they still said you need both of them. Now, what would happen, says the Rashba, if somebody did not say Atachon Antanu, and then he ate, and also didn't say Baruch Hamavdo, and he ate or did Malacha, and before making Havdalah. Now then, the din is that now he has to go back and repeat, so normally we would say a person misses out Atachon Antanu, he doesn't have to do anything, that's fine, he's going to make Havdalah. But here, where he ate or did Malacha before Havdalah, then he's going to have to daven over again and do the right thing and say Atachon Antanu. So it's somewhat similar, or at least you can use it as a simen, the way you have over here, where once you're redoing it, then you redo the whole thing. Once you go and sift it out, then you're sifting out the whole thing, the same way once there that he did something wrong in terms of Havdalah by doing Malacha before Havdalah, and then he has to repeat Shemana Esrei and say Atachon Antanu. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara over here. So again, we're going to have a series of Braises, of Mishnayos and Braises, where we're going to try to prove or disprove Rav Huna's din, or at least the two angles on it, whether we say that it's a matter of din or a matter of knas. So basically, I have a contradiction on the idea that this point that we said about him being entitled to a refund of all of it is a matter of din. So we have a seeming contradiction to that from a Mishnah in Kilai. The Mishnah describes Kol Sa'a Sheyesh Ba Roiva Mimin Acher, when you have a saw of grain that has in it a roiva of, again, 1/24 of a different species. So here, for example, you're talking about, let's say, so he has a saw of wheat, and somewhere mixed into that saw of wheat is up to 1/4 cav of barley. Now, you can't plant wheat and barley together. That would be kalai zrayim. So therefore, you might. So he has to reduce the amount of barley by taking out some of it until it gets down to less than a roiva. Another possibility is he could add instead more wheat. The fact is, as the Tosfos Yom Tov points out on that Mishnah, it's only a matter of maris ayin. Because after all, it is bottle on a daraisa level. After all, things are bottle beroyed. So therefore, we're not going to make him. Take all of it. It's enough that he takes. We're even going to allow him to be bottle. We're going to even allow him to add more wheat to it and be bottle at that. But the point is, he has to get it below 1/24. So Savrua, so the Bnei HaYeshiva, who brought up the question, thought to say, the roiva de kilayim ki yosem roiva de hacha, that the threshold of exactly a roiva, of exactly 1/24, when it comes to kilayim, is exactly the same as the more than a roiva over here. In other words, the point is, we're saying by kilayim, we're saying that a roiva is considered significant enough that we say you can't just say that it's bottle, and therefore, as far as, by the way, when are we talking about it gotten mixed in? By the way, let's talk about that first. The Rashbam brings from Rabbeinu Chananel, who says that it means that we're talking about either before it was planted or even after it was planted and it didn't yet take root in the ground. He says, no, once it took root in the ground, it became osur already at that point, because at that point it grew as kilayim. Tosfos discusses that point that no, Yemayet even implies that it's already rooted in the ground and it's fine. So no, we're talking about that they are mechubal akarka. And yes, even if they took root, you would be able to reduce it afterwards. The kilay zroim don't actually become osur bahana, unlike kilay akera. Anyway, the point is, so now the Gemara is saying like this, that it would seem that when it comes to Kilayim, a Roivah is considered very significant, and therefore therefore it's not Batal, and that would be the equivalent of more than a Roivah, in our case, of Mecha Chomemka, of buying and selling, that a person is not going to be Moichel on it. And that would also mean that Ashbam adds, it would mean that less than a roiva by Kilayim would be the equivalent of a roiva when it comes to Yehud. We would say the same way as a person is moichel on a roiva, the same way when it comes to Kilayim, we'd say less than a roiva, less than 1/24th is not significant. So now, if we learn it that way, the katoni you might. Now the Braisa is not a Mishnah, rather, is not saying by Kilayim that you have to remove all the barley. It's enough that you might. You remove enough of it to bring it down to below the 1/24th. And even though Kilayim is a very serious Isser, after all, based in, unlike with Mecha Homemka, you can say, fine, Hefker based in Hefker, you can say that based in can be Mafkir, the ownership of one person in favor of another, and therefore that they could declare whatever threshold they want. Here by Kilayim, it's a matter of Isser Veheter, and they can't really do that. And still we see that it's enough that you might, that all you have to do is you have to reduce it, you don't have to take out all of the barley. Well then, in that case, then that should tell us that, so now when we're saying that Rav Huna is saying that he can sift out all of it, and he's entitled to a refund of all of it, based on if we draw an analogy between that and the Mishnah and Kilayim, then we would say he's only entitled to a refund of anything, of any dirt that he found above of Roiva, but not up to the Roiva itself. In fact, it's almost like a culture game that Rashbam points out. You can make a kavah chomer, madach kilayim, we're based in, can't be mevatel the iser, and we're still saying that once he started, he's not obligated to finish the job and take out all of the mixed in grain. All the more so over here when it's a matter of mechila and hefker based in hefker. The Rashbam does also add, now the Gemara could have given a different answer. The Gemara could have given an answer that it's not really the same thing, because one depends on Mechila, and the other one, because one depends on Mechila, and one not. Again, once he started sifting it out, it's easier for him to just finish the job, but the Gemara is going to give a better answer anyway. So the answer is, no, that's not necessarily. You're assuming that a roiva by Kilayim is the equivalent of more than a roiva here by Mecha Chomemker, because we're saying a person is not going to be moichel on more than a roiva in the same way he's not, the same way it's going to be osur when there's exactly a roiva when it comes to Kilayim. So now you could say, no, roiva to Kilayim, ki roiva to Hochadami, a roiva over there is exactly the same status as a roiva over here. So when it comes to Kilayim, in other words, that really would be Batal. So therefore, and that's true in both cases. So when it comes to Kilayim, it's already Batal as a Roiva. And therefore, all you need to do, really, strictly speaking, you wouldn't need to take out anything at all. It's only a Chumra Ba'alma, as the Gemara is going to go say, because of the Chumra of Kilayim, then we're going to require him to take out some of it. But not that much, as long as he takes out a couple of stalks or a couple of grains or whatever, then he's done the job and that's good enough. So the same way over here, we could say that when there's exactly a roiva, then yeah, if he wants to start picking it out, he's still not going to be entitled to say, well, I'm going to pick out all of it and then demand a refund for all of the roiva, because we're going to say that the roiva itself is batal, only when it's more than that. So roiva to kilayim, ki roiva to hochadami, we would say rather that a roiva by kilayim is batal in the same way. A roiva over here is batal, and he's moichel on it, and that would be that. Well, the Gemara says, Yehochi Amai Yemayit. Well, then, if it's a bottle, then why by Kilayim? Why are we requiring him to reduce the percentage of the barley anyway by taking out some of the barley or adding some more wheat? Just say it's bottle and then it's bottle and that's that. And the answer is Mishum Chumra of the Kilayim. Because of the Chumra of Kilayim, because Kilayim can actually be also Bahana in many cases. So therefore, we're going to be machmer on him, and we're going to tell him you at least have to reduce the percentage. But in principle, it would have been batal. In other words, the point is, and then the Yad Ramah makes the point. He says that listen, the chumra is, in other words, that if you're going to allow him exactly a roiva, then it might be what about it? Might be slightly more than a roiva, and he might not realize. So therefore, we tell him make sure that it is actually less than a roiva. Okay, well, the Gemara asks, Yehochi Ema Sefer, Well, look at then in that case, you're going to say that you're going to say then that when it comes to the Mishnah and Kelayim, you're going to say that a Roiva is actually bottle, and therefore in principle, he shouldn't even have to reduce it by any further than that, and just because of the Chumra of Kelayim, we're requiring him to. But the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yossi, I'm a Yogur. Rabbi Yossi disagrees and says he has to pick it all out. Tosfos brings that there was a gusa that they had in front of them that the Gemara had said Toshma, that the Gemara was going to try to bring this as a separate proof against in favor of Rav Huna, but no, we're not going to say that if according to the Tanakhama, we're going to say it's only a Chumra Ba'alma, we're not going to say that Rav Yossi is going to go to the other extreme and penalize him. So no, so the question rather would be, this is the continuation then of the previous question. If you're going to tell me that a Roiva when it comes to Kelayim is the equivalent of more than a Roiva when it comes to Dirk by Mekah HaMemker, and therefore, in other words, that when the Mishnah says Yemayit is not a matter of Knas, it's a matter of Ne'ikar Adin. He has to reduce it below a Roiva because otherwise it's like more than a Roiva of dirt when it comes to grain, where he's not Moichel, where it's not Bottle. Well then, then we can understand the logic of why Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim are disagreeing, because Tanakama Sava Loi Kansinan Hetera Otu Isura, the Tanakama is going to say that, look, it would have been Mutter up to a Roiva. So therefore, we're not going to penalize him and say that that we should require him, once he's taking it out, to take out all of it. They're going to say, yes, there is a Roiva over there. That's a problem. You have to remove it because it's not Bottle. So the Tanakhama would say, fine, all you have to do is get it below that threshold, get it below a Roiva, and you're good. Meanwhile, Rabbi Yossi would hold that, since you already have an amount of there, that's also kansinan, then we do penalize him and tell him to take out all of it. So therefore, in other words, in effect, we would say that, that Rav Yossi's opinion fits well with Rav Huna. In fact, Rashbam and Tosfos both bring the gears of Toshma as well, that it would mean the Gemara is bringing this as a separate thing. We said the Tanakama's opinion doesn't necessarily bear on Rav Huna's, but at least we could say that maybe Rav Yossi's opinion supports Rav Huna's. But the gears that we have in front of us, Ema Sefer, is the continuation of the previous one, that if you're going to say that when it comes to the Tanakama's opinion, we're understanding that a Roiva there is the equivalent of a Roiva here, and it should really be Bottle, and just we're saying because of the Chumra of Kelayim, we're making him reduce it, then fine. So the problem with that is then, if we say that no, the argument is only about when it's more than a Roiva, then fine. The Tanakama is saying, look, when it's more than a Roiva, you have to take it out, but we're not going to obligate you to take out all of it. It's enough that you take it out to get it below a Roiva. And Rabbi Yossi is going to hold more like Rabbi Yehuda and say, once you're taking it out, you have to take all of it out. Eli, Amit Keroiva Domi, but if you're going to tell me that a Roiva by Kelayim is exactly like a Roiva over here, and therefore it is actually Bottle in both cases, Amai Yogur, then why would Rabbi Yossi go so far as to say that Yogur? Why would he tell us that you have to remove all of the barley instead of just saying that, look, it's basically Bottle. The Chumra of Kelayim is going to require you to do something, but why should you have to take out all of it? And the answer is Hossam, Haina Taim de Rabbi Yossi, Mishum de Mechzi Kimakayim Kelayim. The reason why Rabbi Yossi makes him take out all of it is because it makes it look, otherwise if he doesn't, it looks like he wants to keep Kelayim in his field. Because Rabbi Yossi says, listen, once he started taking out some of the mixed grain, then it makes it almost look as though like he deliberately wants to plant Kelayim over here. Or even when they were planted in the ground already, and he goes and then pulls out some of them. So again, it looks like he's keeping Kelayim over there. And the fact is, not only is a person also to plant Kelayim, he's also to keep Kelayim in his field. So Rabbi Yossi says, in this case, then that's what you're going to have. If you allow him when there was a Roiva, and he's going to pick out some of it, then it's going to make it look like he deliberately wants to plant or to keep Kelayim in his field. So that would be a specific din of kalayim. It wouldn't necessarily apply to other areas in. It wouldn't necessarily apply to other areas in halacha. So we could understand that the Ritva points out you're not going to say they're arguing about what the actual threshold is that answers it, because practically speaking, where do we get the threshold from? It's not like it's based on a limud from a pasuk, on a gzeiras hakasev or something. It's based on the practical thing that farmers find. How much is there usually mixed in? So it would be machloikas b'metzios. It would be almost like a machloikas on the actual facts on the ground, how much percentage there is. And we're not going to assume that Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim are arguing on that, how much is likely to get mixed in. So therefore, so it would be a matter of machloikas and svaris. So again, so fine. Rabbi Yossi has a svara that applies specifically to the area of kilayim, that you don't want to make it look like he's keeping kilayim or planting kilayim or keeping kilayim in his field deliberately. But that doesn't necessarily apply to other areas in halacha. Okay. So the Gemara says Toshma. Let's try to bring another proof. We learned a Mishnah in Bav Metzia. Shnayim sheifkidu etzel echad zemana v'zemasayim. Two people came and deposited for safekeeping by one person. One deposited 100 zuz and one deposited 200. Zema masayim shaliv, zema masayim shaliv. And now when they come to collect it, each one says 200 is mine. So the din is, the Mishnah said he gives each one of them a money because each of them for sure owns 100. And the remainder, the third 100, we've set aside until the Yahu comes or until we figure out who is telling the truth. We learned about this in Bava Metzia. Tosfos pointed out over there, we wouldn't say that we would divide it between them, because that for sure, the Gemara explains that for sure wouldn't be valid. There's no question that there's no way that we can say that one of them owns half and the other one owns half. So the Gemara points out at the beginning of Bava Metzia, when you have, for example, Shnaim Ochsim Batalis, conceivably, when each one says Kula Shali, it conceivably, it may in fact belong half and half to them, because each one of them may have picked it up at the exact picked up his end at the exact same moment, as opposed to over here. There's no question either one of them owns the whole 100 or the other one does. There's no way that we can say that there would be any possibility of it being true that each one owns 50, so therefore we can't do that. Anyway, then the Mishnah continues. So what are we saying? In other words, that we don't, now Rav Yossi over there disagrees and says him came mahifsid and amai. The Gemara is going to bring that in a minute. But according to the Tanakhama, in other words, we don't say that because somebody is lying over here, then therefore we penalize him by taking away everything that he would have had. In other words, tell him that you can't get your 100 either. We don't say that. So now the question is on Rav Huna, who's saying over here that you have, according to one understanding of Rav Huna's din, it's a matter of knas that he's selling peiros that have more than a roiva mixed in of dirt, and therefore there's a strong possibility that he actually mixed it in himself, and therefore we want to penalize him. But we see in the Mishnah in Bava Metzia, there's also a strong possibility about each one of them that he's lying, because definitely one of them is lying, and yet the Tanakhama says that we don't penalize him that and take away the 100 that for sure does belong to him. We only keep the extra 100 in escrow because we don't know. So we see, in other words, that we don't apply a matter of knas over there. So why over here would Rav Huna say the possibility that we do? So the Gemara answers back, Hochi Hashta. How are you thinking to compare those two cases? Hosam vade monolamar. There's no question. Each one of them does own a mona. So the heter is a vadai. So therefore we don't have a reason to penalize him. But over here, how do you know? Maybe he mixed in all of it. Maybe to begin with, it started out as completely clean grain, and every little bit of dirt that's in there is something he mixed in. So in other words, we have what's called the raglayim ladava. We have a strong reason to suspect that he mixed it in, because it's not normal for grain to have that much dirt mixed into it. So now that gives us much more reason to think that he actually mixed in all of it.
And in fact, Tosfos points out the Gemara could have given a different answer. There also, you know, one of them is definitely not a Ramai. You want to say you want to penalize the Ramai, but on the other hand, you'd end up penalizing the other guy too if you did that. And one of them is definitely not a Ramai, as opposed to over here, because the guy himself may be a Ramai in the first place. There's only one person, there's only one seller we're saying over here, and he might be the Ramai, but again, the Gemara is giving a better answer. That here, in other words, the point of the answer is over there, even the Ramai, we know for sure that there is a certain part of his claim that's valid. He's claiming 200. He has no right to the second 200, but he definitely has a right to the first 100. Here, we don't even know when he's selling this grain and it has too much dirt in it, we don't even know that any part of that dirt is something that was there to begin with. It might well be that he mixed in all of it. So that might still be a reason to say that we penalize him, and once the buyer is sifting out the dirt and saying, I don't want to accept it like this, then because it's got more than a roiva, then we would require the buyer to take back all of the dirt rather than just the amount over a roiva. Okay? The Gemara says, Toshmami Sefer. Well, then let's try to prove from the Sefer of that same Mishnah. Amar Rav Yossi Imken Mahifsev Haramai, where Rav Yossi says, if you're going to do that, then what does the cheater lose out? He's going to get 100, so therefore he has no incentive, and he only owns 100 in the first place, so that's not going to give him any incentive to admit and tell the truth. So rather, Rabbi Yossi says, Ela hakol yehim munachat yov elyo. Rather, we have to leave all of it until Eliyahu comes, and that will induce him to confess, because otherwise he's going to lose out his 100 as well. So again, the point is, in other words, that we see that Rabbi Yossi is applying a knas, and saying that because of that, we're going to take away even the non-knas part from him. So we could say that if we learn Rav Huna's din as being as a result of knas, then it would fit with what Rav Yossi is saying over there. But again, the Gemara says, Hochi Hashta, how are you thinking? And in fact, even the Yad Ramah adds a point that when we know for sure that there's a heter over there, then they're going to say, look, you can't penalize the innocent one in order to force the guilty one to confess. But where even the Chacham would agree that where you have a scenario, we don't know for sure that either of them is innocent, then we might well do that. So they do agree with the basic svara. So then that would fit nicely with Rav Huna's svara over here, that we would say that it's a knas. But again, the Gemara asks, Hochi Hashta, how are you thinking to compare? Hosam Vade Iker Ramai. There's no question that one of them is a cheater, because it's definitely the case that both of them don't own 200. One of them is definitely lying when he claims that he owns 200. He, on the other hand, how do you know that he even mixed in anything? Yes, you're saying, as we said in the previous part, according to the Chachamim, we do have a raglayim ladover to think that maybe he mixed in all of it, and that could be. On the other hand, the fact is maybe he didn't mix in any of it. Maybe it happened somehow unexpectedly that you have more dirt over here than you would actually expect. So therefore, so you could say even Rabbi Yossi might hold that you wouldn't necessarily penalize him in a case like that. So no proof one way or the other from either of the opinions in that Mishnah. Okay. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. A Braisa says, Shtar Shiyesh Bo Ribis. When you have a shtar, that Reuben owes Shimon money, and there's ribis written in the document. So it actually says there, ribis tzutza, on such and such a day, Reuben lent Shimon $100 with the understanding that when Shimon pays back, he's going to pay back $110. So then we pen it out. We learned in Bav Metzia that there's a difference we said ribis tzutza yotze b'dayonim. When it comes to fixed ribis like that, then the dayonim can force him to return it. As opposed to, we said avak ribis, we said the various cases over there that we said throughout Perek Ezer Neshach that we learned were only ribis d'rabbanan. So we said the dayonim can't force him to return it. He should, if he wants to be lotzis yidei shamayim, to exempt himself from punishment by Hashem. So here we have this ribis tzutza, so therefore Beis Din has to get involved. So coincidentally, so we penalize the lender, the ena goyva, lo yasa keren, lo yasa ribis, divrei the mayor, so the mayor says he won't be able to collect either the principal or the ribis. So there we have an example where we're penalizing him and taking away the heter because of the iser. Tosfos actually discusses over here what about for example if afterwards what about if later on Shimon comes and admits that he does owe the 100. The basic 100, or you have Edom about it or whatever. So no, we would still say that Reuven the lender still forfeits all of it because of the rib, because he did ribis over here. And Tosfos discusses a little bit about the details of that. Would we actually say that he loses all of it? So that would mean so again, Tosfos brings from the Ri that says that no, that he wouldn't be able to collect anything at all, even if you have independent evidence about that loan or whatever. And then Tosfos points out, I mean, on the other hand, wait a minute though, don't you have then the loiva also did an aveira after all, because borrowing at ribis is also an aveira. So then it comes out that he's gaining. So the Ri answers back that no, because what we're saying is the lender is the one who profits. He's the one who stands to gain a profit from it. So therefore, they penalize him that he loses all of the loan, and that way he'll be careful in the future. The loiver, what are you going to do? I mean, to begin with, he borrowed. He's not profiting from this. Indirectly, he's getting a reward because now he's not having to pay his loan. But to begin with, he borrowed the money with the understanding that he's going to pay it back. And with that said, Tosfos elsewhere says that maybe it doesn't mean the shtar is completely invalid. It just means we treat it like a like a milval pes. He can't collect from nechosim mishabadim, but he would be able to collect with it at all. So there's more detail about what kind of, whether there's a difference in that regard between different kinds of ribis. One point is that if it was ribis daraisa, then the edim themselves should be possible for signing on such a document. Anyway, maybe we're talking about ribis d'rabbanan, and therefore the shtar don't become, therefore the edim don't become possible edus. Anyway. The point is, in other words, that here we have Reb Meir saying that the shtar, that he loses not only the ribis, he also loses the keren. So there you have an example where we penalize him to take away not only the ribis, which is aser, but even the part that in and of itself would have been mutter. Divrei Reb Meir. So that would be the same way over here. We could say that we're penalizing the seller and making him pay back all of the value of all of the dirt, even though up to a roiva was something that he would have been mutter to sell it with. But again, the Gemara answers, Hachi Hashta, how are you comparing the two cases? Hosam, the difference is that there, with a shtar with ribis, Mishask Sivo, who do Ovid Le Shuma. As soon as the shtar was written, he was right away over, who do Ovid Le Suma, actually, Suma with a sin. At that point already, he did the Isser of Lois Simun Olav Nesha. By writing out a shtar that involves ribis, at that point he was already over on the din, on the mitzvah that the Torah says, don't impose neshech, don't impose ribis on him. So therefore, you could say that right away then we penalize him about everything that's written in the shtar, keren and all. But over here, miyei medar ruvi arev. After all, we don't know for sure that he mixed in anything. Like we said, maybe after all he didn't mix in anything, and just this particular crop of grain happened to have more dirt in it than usual. So therefore, even a mayor would say that not necessarily are you going to penalize him. Fine, you might say that he has to refund for more than the roiva, for the dirt that goes beyond the roiva, but not necessarily that he should have to refund for what's up to a roiva. Okay, the Gemara says again, Toshma mi Seifa. Let's try to prove from the Seifa of that Braisa. V'cham say he is entitled to collect the Keren, just not the Ribis. In fact, Tosfos, by the way, points out that there are other cases also where Shtar is written and it's no good to begin with. For example, a predated Shtar. Tosfos says the difference is that, that's exactly it. Yeah, when you have a case like that, the Gemara doesn't need to bring that because it's exactly the same kind of thing, that a predated shtar is in fact the same thing he was over on Midrash Sheker Tirchak right away when he wrote it. Anyway, again, whether according to the Chachamim you can collect with this shtar even from the Chosim Mishabodim is another point that Tosfos discusses over here, and again, Tosfos point discusses it in Bava Metzia as well. So the Chachamim say goyves a keren ve'ina goyves a keren ve'ina goyves a ribis. He can collect the keren, just not the ribis. So we see the Chachamim do not penalize him by taking away the keren, even though he was over on the issue of ribis. So applying that to over here, we would say we're not penalizing him by making him pay for the entire amount of dirt, just for the amount above the roiva. And again, the Gemara says hochi hashta. How do you compare it? It's still very different. Hosam vade kane de teru. There's no question the keren itself is mutter. You're allowed to lend somebody $100 and he'll pay you back $100. So the Chachamim would say you're not going to penalize him with that. You won't allow him to collect the ribis, of course, but there's no reason to take away something which intrinsically is mutter. Chacham miyema dekula le'arubi ariv. But again, here we have the possibility that he mixed it in the adayim in the first place, and therefore that every single bit of dirt in there is something that didn't belong in there in the first place and something that he added. So therefore, maybe the Chachamim would say that maybe we should penalize him and take away all of it and make him have to pay for all of the dirt. So still no proof one way or the other, and the Gemara tries to bring, another proof. So we learn Toshma. Now we have in the next Perek, we're going to learn about the dinim of sales of land. And in this Perek, we're focusing on sales of metaltlin, of Paris. But in the next Perek, we're going to talk about when a person sells land, how much. Now, for example, he says, I'm selling you a base kur. It's not expected that it's going to be a base kur, literally to the inch. There's going to be also a certain amount of tolerance for mismeasurement, or as we're going to learn there in the next parak, for you may have in the field, there may be certain places that are higher or lower or different other things like that. Now you have a case over there where a person says I'm selling you a base core, and he says I'm selling it hein choser hein yeser. There can be a case where he sells it and says that it might be a little more or a little less. So now, what it is, so again, when you're measuring land, you're not necessarily measuring to the actual inch. Now, elsewhere, the Gemara points out that a surveyor should be careful with that. He should be careful even to the inch, because even a tiny amount of land, you could plant saffron in there, which is very expensive, and therefore the guy could make a huge profit even from a small strip of land. Nevertheless, though, we're talking about that he tells him that I'm selling you hein choser, hein yeser, I'm selling you a base kur, an area where you can plant therisa, but a little more or a little less. So now it describes over there in the Mishnah that then again there's a tolerance of up to a roiva per sa. So again, 1/24. But then what about if the mismeasurement was more than that? Then we have to figure it out, and we have to make the appropriate additions or deductions. And a Braisa says on that, loyas amoisa bovadhu machzer. Now in that case, he doesn't have to return the extra amount. Elamachzeres kolor avoyin kolon. He has to return to him all the roivas. So in other words, he sold him a base kur which contains 30 saw, and was saying that there should be a tolerance of up to 30 roivas, one roiva per saw. So we're saying that if there was a mismeasurement of more than that amount, then he's going to have to return him all of those amounts, or vice versa, he's going to have to refund him for all of those amounts. And in other words, so we're not going to say that, well, he had a right to mismeasure up to a base roiva, so he's not obligated to do anything about that. He just has to do something about the extra. We don't see that. So we see that you have an example where we're penalizing him and taking away the heter because of the issue, because he mismeasured. So Alma hecha de boy aduri kula mahader. So we see that when you're going to return it, you're going to return the whole thing. So actually, the Rashbam points out the Gemara's attempted proof over here is actually saying that it's actually according to the first lashon of Rav Huna. It's not necessarily a matter of penalty. It's a matter of a din, that there's a certain threshold up to which a person is willing to be moichel, but not beyond that. So now we're saying, well then, in that case, so now we reach that threshold and he's not moichel, and therefore we're making him return all of it. So the, uh, So the Gemara says, so Alma Hefer, the Boyaduri, Kulamahadir. So you see that when he has to return it, then he has to return all of it. So it's a matter of din rather than a matter of knas. But again, the Gemara answers that. What kind of a comparison is that? There, to begin with, he did tell him that the measurement of a base score is not exact, and it might be a little under or a little over. So that meant, in other words, in effect, he's saying, I expect that you're going to be moichel up to a certain threshold of mismeasurement. In fact, if he hadn't said that, he would have to actually return him the extra amounts, even when the mismeasurement was smaller than that. So all we would say is miu revia like choshiv yosim revia choshiv. But we would say less than a roiva. Persa is not considered so important, and therefore we could say that he's merchel. And the point is also that more than a roiva, kivin the chazi leads to rufi, the kivin the chazi leads to rufi, the tishas cabin. After all, earlier in the Masechta, it talked about the minimum size area that's considered a field in halacha would be an area where you could plant 9 cabins. Now, these roivas altogether, putting them all together, here you have, in a base score, you're going to have 30. And you have 30 extra roivas, which amounts to 7.5 cabins. So we're very close already to 9. So you may have if it's a little bit more than that, you're going to have a full 9 cabin. Havalech arach hashivta ba'apinafsha, and the result is you're going to have a piece of land which has a certain hashivus of its own, v'hadra, and therefore that would have to be returned. So in that case, we would say, because we're talking about land and it can actually add up to something which has a certain chashivus of its own, so therefore we say that when you're returning, you have to return all of it, because then the point is that you're making one big piece of land that has that kind of chashivus. As opposed to when it comes over here with the dirt, then not necessarily are we going to say that. Maybe in fact he only has to repay him for the extra amount, not more than the roiva. So still no proof one way or the other. No proof one way or the other from that, because there the actual amounts of land do amount to something important on their own, as opposed to over here the dirt doesn't really amount to anything important on its own. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, and we're going to continue with dealing with more attempted proofs one way or the other for Rav Huna's Din.